Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with Christopher Ferguson, a former NASA astronaut and a retired U.S. Navy captain. Christopher, thanks for joining us on WTOP.
Hey, Jason. Thank you.
Now, we're here to talk about the new IMAX 3D movie, Journey to Space, that's coming to the Smithsonian here at the Air and Space Museum. But before we get into that, do you mind just telling our listeners first just a little bit of your NASA career?
Sure. Hey, I joined NASA in 1998 as a naval officer and pilot, and I spent 13 years as an active astronaut. I've flown on three space shuttle missions to the International Space Station, beginning in 2006. And one of the thrills of a lifetime, while I hated to see the space shuttle go away, was being able to command the final space shuttle mission in July of 2011. So that was a thrill for me. And I left NASA shortly thereafter. I now work for the Boeing Company in a what's called the Commercial Crew Program. This is Boeing's entrant in a field of two that will return Americans to the International Space Station from an American rocket and return them back to the United States. It'll replace the capability that the Russians currently provide for us. So that's a short biography for you.
See, WTOP listeners, ladies and gents, it's not every day we talk to an astronaut, especially the final shuttle mission commander. That's incredible. Looking forward into the future, do you expect the program to be, started back up at all ever again, or do you think it was kind of its era?
There's a famous quote that was uttered by someone that said, it's just a chapter in a book that's a very long journey. So we're in space as a species to stay. There's no question in my mind. The only question is, How long does it go between great advancements? Back in the 60s, we made it to the moon, and we did that in the span of just 15 short years from the time we started, even thinking about space. It was amazing.
Right.
And then we simmered for a little while, and then we built the International Space Station, a great outpost that's been occupied for 15 years now. And, the question is, when will our next big thrust come? I think that all of us would love to see us have humans on the moon someday, or I'm sorry, on Mars someday. So, the space program will never leave us. It lives in all of our imaginations. I think we'll be doing this from now until the day we cease to exist as a species. But the next big thrust, like I said, I look forward to the day I see a multinational crew walking on Mars.
Absolutely. It'd be a wild day for sure. Take me back, growing up. When did you get bit by the outer space bug? Was it, watching John Glenn, Neil Armstrong, or was it more of a pop culture, a movie or something?
Yeah, that's a good question. I had to think about that myself. I grew up in the age of Apollo. When I was a young, impressionable kid, I watched Neil Armstrong walk on the moon. I was probably 8 years old at the time, and I want to think that I sort of got bit at the time, but that was what other people did. Other famous heroes, really smart people did. I couldn't possibly aspire to something like that. But I went to college, went in the Navy, learned to fly, went to test pilot school, got a graduate degree, and a few years into that adventure, I realized that everything that the former astronauts had done, I had accomplished, not with the express intent of becoming an astronaut myself someday, but I thought, sure, what the heck, let's give it a try. And I applied a couple times and got really lucky once. And it's just been such a wonderful experience. I don't think most Americans appreciate what an incredible collection of people there are that work for NASA and the subcontractors who support the space program. It's a wonderful thing. And the nice thing is we like to think we're advancing humanity in our own little way.
One last question before we get to Journey to Space, which is more of a documentary-style movie, right? Are there any fictional accounts, narrative movies, Apollo 13, The Right Stuff, Interstellar? Which of those do you think captures it the best compared to your actual real-life experience?
I'd have to say, I was always a big fan of Apollo 13. I thought that was just a fantastic movie. I've always loved it. And I'd have to say that, if you had to draw a parallel between, space shuttle operations and watching what that crew went through, of course, it wasn't fiction. It really happened. Mm-hmm. And if I had to say that I could see myself in a position like that because of something that had bad that happened in space, that I related to that the most. That said, I really liked Interstellar. I thought it was excellent. That was a really good story. And there's some great books out there, too. I'm looking forward to a book by Andy Weir called The Martian. I'm looking forward to seeing that made into a movie. It's just a wonderful story.
That's awesome. And then it's got to be wild to think these are these great things you've seen, you know, either on news stories, other, you know, astronauts historically do, or you've seen it on the big screen in a movie form. And then here you are actually doing it. What, did you ever have to pinch yourself when you're on that final mission?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think that's the analogy that I've used a couple times. You know, I remember speaking to the crew when we started training. There were only four of us on that final mission, so it was, you know, it was relatively low population compared to some of its predecessor shuttle missions. And thinking that, you know, here we are a year out from what will be the final space shuttle flight. This is going to by far be the best year of our lives. And in hindsight, looking back, it was absolutely true. You know, we had just the experience to, of course, you know, be on the final flight, but also to thank all the people who had made the shuttle program happen, some of whom had made an entire career out of it, and knowing that you know, their contribution to the, you know, to human spaceflight was over, and they could walk out the door feeling very good about themselves and their accomplishments for our country. So, yeah, I'd have to say that's it.
Awesome. All right, let's get into Journey to Space a little bit, the IMAX 3D movie at the Smithsonian. It's narrated by Patrick Stewart, which we all remember from Star Trek and Next Generation, and you are interviewed heavily in the film. How did they approach you to be a part of it?
Well, let me see. It was shortly after I joined Boeing. Things were sort of winding down from the STS-135 mission. Boeing is a big sponsor of the movie. I think K2 Productions is the production company that put it together. And there were other, I think Toyota is a sponsor as well. But, you know, anything that sort of furthers the interest in space and sciences, you know, Boeing likes to get in there and sponsor these great events. So it was just a very nice synergy. I had just joined the company. They were putting together a story on the twilight of the shuttle program and how it would lead into expeditions to Mars. And they gave me a call and asked me if I'd be interested in participating as really a technical expert. And then it sort of, the role grew a little bit, and they gave me a shot or two in a few speaking roles. So I don't rival and don't pretend to rival Patrick Stewart, but I don't have that wonderful voice, but I did my best.
Do your Morgan Freeman impression or something. what all ground does the movie cover in terms of, you know, story-wise? I know it's a documentary, but what all topics does it cover?
You know, it starts off talking about how, you know, we as a human species, you know, even though all of us get wrapped up in our day-to-day lives here, you know, the bigger picture is that we're all just, you know, we're just little cogs in a very large machine that's called planet Earth. And that if you look at our destiny, you know, hundreds of years ago, we set off from the shores of Europe to go explore the globe. And we seem to be poised in a very similar position right now to set off from the shores of Earth and go to other places that we can go to. And how do we make that transition from where we've been, which is living in low Earth orbit aboard the International Space Station and traversing back and forth on the space shuttle, how do we make that next leap out to those other places that have been visited but perhaps not explored? You know, we've been to Mars several times robotically, but boy, you know, how compelling to send a human expedition there or a series of human expeditions there for, you know, for 6 months or a year. So the story it kind of flows from some wonderfully spectacular space shuttle footage all the way up to what vehicles would look like and what's on the drawing board for vehicles to go to Mars and the spacesuits that they'll use, how they'll live, how they'll breathe, and just where we're headed as a species beyond low Earth orbit.
A, have you had a chance to see the movie? And B, have you had a chance to see it in 3D IMAX?
No. I've seen earlier clips, but I don't know what sort of survived the editing desk. But somebody yesterday said, hey, they saw the movie at the Smithsonian, so I guess it must be showing there now.
And, yeah, it's there already.
It was really good. They said it was very well done. You know, an interesting sort of aside to the story is the space shuttle in some of its earlier missions, and you do see some older shuttle footage in there, carried IMAX cameras. Of course, back when IMAX was, you know, a new innovation, it was all film. Now IMAX is all digital. And carrying that heavy film to space was really, it was costly. So the astronauts had to make very efficient use of the film, and there wasn't many flights that it was carried on. So that's why some of the IMAX footage you see, the 3D footage, was from much earlier space missions. Whereas, you know, now they film them all in digital 3D, which is just incredible.
Now, I'm sure, you know, if our listeners go to the Smithsonian and watch it in 3D IMAX, it's going to be, you know, trying to live vicariously through actual space missions, and we can imagine what it must be like. But as someone who's actually done it, like yourself, describe for me the first time, in your first time ever up there, looking back and seeing Earth from a distance. Explain what that feeling was like. It must be almost out of body.
That's a very good description. You know, we tend to live on this Earth for a long time, and we think we've seen everything. But when you see something that's truly spectacular, whether it be the Grand Canyon or the Arctic, you know, and this, you have this sort of first experience of something that is beyond sort of comprehension, or at least beyond anything that you've seen before. It's very compelling. It's emotional. And, you know, taking that trip, that first trip into space, is certainly no exception. You know, I to answer your question, the experience I recall the most was shortly after launch on my very first flight. We had launched in the daytime, but we rapidly flew into the sunset and spent about 30 minutes going through what was orbital night before the sun came up. And, you know, as a pilot, you're fairly busy for that first half hour. You have to shut the vehicle down. You have to, you know, there's a lot of work to do. But I do remember when the sun first came up, this was my first orbital sunrise, we were in an unusual attitude. We were pointed directly at the Earth. And you don't often do that for several reasons. But at this particular moment, we were pointed directly at the Earth. So I was very busy with my head buried down in the pilot's seat, and I looked up expecting to see the darkness of space, and there was the Earth. Just, it was shooting by at which was an incredible speed, and I think the words out of my mouth were, oh my gosh, you know, like, even if you had tried to imagine what that experience would be like, it did not hold a candle to the reality. It was an out-of-body experience where you get to sort of see the Earth not blurred by borders, and oceans are beautiful blue, and forests are just jade green, and it's just an amazing experience that's hard to convey in words.
Has it affected your, you know, outlook now that you're back down here grounded on this, you know, third rock from the sun here? Do you look out at the night sky differently now?
You know, I always look out at the night sky. I have always been somewhat, I wouldn't call myself an astronomer, but I guess I'd call myself a stargazer. And I do look at it a little bit differently. You know, the one thing that I think the experience of spaceflight has left me with is this overwhelming, compelling feeling to want to go back again. And, you know,
it's an addiction.
I promised my wife that, you know, I would sort of knock off this risky behavior. And, but every time I got back, and sort of indication might, you know, would got floated that I might be able to go up again, I would I say pretty please to my wife, because it is just, it's such an incredible experience that it just draws you back. And I can understand why some of my predecessors, you know, shuttle crew members, I mean, some of them went up six different times. It's an amazing experience that just draws you back. And it makes you wonder if there's not a little part of us that realizes that we belong out there.
Yeah, something buried within us that we know that, you know, that's where we're supposed to be, maybe. That maybe our stay here is temporary. You mentioned in the movie that it kind of, the narrative arc of it, it kind of follows, you know, mankind's exploration, you know, our desire to conquer new frontiers. I'm sure, you know, back in Columbus's day, they thought you'd sail off the end of the Earth, and it turned out to be not true. And is it possible that we just can't even fathom what that next breakthrough is going to be? I mean, are we really that unique that we're the only ones out there in the universe?
Well, there's a lot of opinions on this. You know, I tend to look at things through a very scientific and engineering perspective and say that, you know, there are probably billions of suns just like our own out there, and those suns probably have billions of planets orbiting them, and the odds that none of them are like our Earth are very remote. So I think that it'll be a matter of time, but, you know, we've been sort of poking around on Mars for a couple decades now. I think that we haven't found the Holy Grail, but I think that there has been overwhelming evidence there used to be a very deep ocean on Mars, and where there's oceans, there's usually life. And what are the odds in the billions of planets that are similar to ours out there in the galaxy, knowing that our next door neighbor here in the solar system had a large ocean on it? Mm-hmm. What are the odds that there's not similar sort of circumstances that exist that are well beyond our imagination, the number of environments where life might thrive? You know, I just noticed in the news today that they believe one of Saturn's moons has a bubbly, I don't know if it's water, but they said there's an ice cap, and they believe there's a bubbly water underneath it, whether it's a geyser or something. You know, look at Europa, which is a moon around Jupiter, which is covered with ice. There's water is just in abundance in the universe, and I mean, we found several cases of it just in our very solar system. I think that there's so much out there that we have yet to discover.
How far out are we before we can definitively say that? I mean, right now we're talking about water, but if you had to even guess, you know, how many decades out are we before we can definitively say, you know what, there might be an organism on X planet somewhere?
Yeah. Well, what I think we'll find, I think finding that sort of direct evidence is going to take us a while. I think what we'll find is we'll find inferences of evidence.
Right.
There was a planetary probe that has been serving the globe for several years now called Kepler, and it's off there looking in just a very unique corner of the universe that is really indescribable from any other corner. But it has found what we believe to be, you know, thousands of planets around extra solar suns. In other words, we detect by inference, by the variation of light around these stars, that clearly there's planets orbiting them. So I think it won't take very long for us to really understand more about these planets that we can't see by virtue of where they orbit, how often they orbit, how close they are to the sun, that the world that is around that sun might be very similar to what we have on Earth. So in other words, I think we'll infer life before we actually discover it, but I think both of those are just a matter of time.
It's absolutely fascinating. Hey, Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. The movie sounds like it's a blast, and it's rated G. It's 43 minutes at the IMAX Theater at the Air and Space Museum, so, you know, it's not going to take you a whole day. Parents and kids, you know, you can go out as a family event and enjoy the Air and Space Museum while you're there and see an awesome movie with Chris Ferguson getting interviewed throughout the whole thing. It's called Journey to Space in IMAX 3D. And Chris Ferguson, thanks so much for coming on WTOP.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Jason. You have a good day.